In 1985, horror writer Stephen King wrote one of his most popular novels, Misery, while fighting off his cocaine and alcohol addiction. Out of that came one of King's most famous characters, the wacky Paul Sheldon-obsessed angel of death, Annie Wilkes. And it has been said that Annie Wilkes wasn't just a product of that dark time for King. It is widely believed that she was based on a real-life angel of death, who just a year earlier, in 1984, was sent to prison for the murder of an infant in her care. It is believed that the number of her victims could be as high as 46, all infants. Join me as I tell the story of Angel of Death, Janine Jones. Hello and welcome back to the 3 a.m. Mystery Club podcast. I'm Brandon.
I'm Ro.
And tonight, Derek is on assignment.
What do you think I say when I go to the feed store in town? Oh, now, Wally, give me a bag of that effing pig feed and 10 pounds of that bitchly cow corn. And in the bank, do I tell Mrs. Bollinger, oh, here's one big bastard of a check. Give me some of your Christing money. There, look there. See what you made me do.
What you just heard is one of the wackiest quotes from Annie Wilkes. That one comes courtesy of Kathy Bate from the film adaptation of Stephen King's Misery. And like I've already said, it's believed that Annie Wilkes is based on real-life convicted serial killer Janine Jones. Now, I've never seen any actual statement made by King to confirm this, but the likeness speaks for itself, as does the timeline. Annie Wilkes was a maternity nurse. Janine Jones was a pediatric nurse. A large number of babies died in the care of both nurses. The media dubbed Annie the Dragon Lady. The media dubbed Janine the Angel of Death. Janine was convicted in 1984. King wrote Misery in 1985. I think it's safe to say there was some inspiration there, and thankfully so. Annie is one of the most brilliant and terrifying characters ever created. And I love a good killer nurse story. You know me, if I'm not talking about Munchausen syndrome or hybristophilia, it's a good angel of death tale. And I have the best one for you tonight. Janine Ann Jones was born July 13, 1950 in San Antonio, Texas. She was given up for adoption at birth and was adopted by Dick and Gladys Jones. She and her three siblings were raised in an upper middle class household. And by all accounts, Janine and her siblings didn't want for anything. Dick Jones owned a nightclub, so money flowed freely until around the time Janine was 10 years old. That was when her father was arrested for stealing money and jewelry from one of his nightclub patrons. The financial impact that followed destroyed the Jones family. When Janine was 16, she found her little brother Travis dead after he accidentally set off a homemade bomb in their garage. Left traumatized by his horrible death, she became withdrawn and stopped socializing with friends and began failing classes at school. And then, to make things worse, her father died of cancer. People who knew Janine from school said she would oftentimes pretend to be sick to get attention. And like we've discussed before, killer nurses and Munchausen syndrome often go hand in hand. Others said that she was aggressive and known for lying, manipulating, and betraying people. With her family torn apart, she was looking to start her own family right away. She married Jimmy Delaney Jr. right out of high school, and I've read that she pretended to be pregnant just to get him to marry her. A local high school dropout, Delaney soon enlisted in the Navy, and while he was gone, a hypersexual Janine allegedly slept with as many men as she could. And when she wasn't banging the local dudes, she was attending cosmetology school. She eventually began work as a hairdresser, and when her husband returned from the Navy, the couple had two children.
I'm going to interrupt you there just because that whole description of her reminded me of the character Marty from Grease.
Well, and she's about to drop out, so. Yeah, so they had two kids, but Janine found herself very unhappy and decided to leave her husband and children. And she also couldn't keep any clients, so she decided to ditch her job as a hairdresser. I guess she sucked at giving perms or something. So she decided to look at other career options. She had always been interested in the medical field, so she decided to enroll in a vocational school to train to be a nurse. Multiple reports indicate that she quickly became obsessed with her new career, but longed for the power that came with being a doctor. She wanted to diagnose and cure people, not, you know, give out medicine and take temperatures, as, you know, a vocational nurse would have done in late 1970s. Janine landed her first job in 1977 at San Antonio's Methodist Hospital, but she was let go just 8 months later for unprofessionalism. She apparently tried to overstep her boundaries, often trying to do things she wasn't qualified to do. She was also said to be rude to some of the patients. After that first job, she was then hired to work in the pediatric intensive care unit at Bexar County Medical Center Hospital, what is now known as the University Hospital of San Antonio. And it is there where she'd get that deadly taste of power.
Was she a registered nurse, an LPN, or a vocational nurse? Which would be an LVPN or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Then it was called like an IVN or something. She was a vocational nurse.
Okay, okay.
And I was not sure how different that was from an LPN. I know like an LPN is pretty limited in what they can do, right? They're really like...
Yeah. So LPN and LVN are very similar. There's a small difference in what they can do. And in modern day times, it's very minute in the difference. But back in the 70s, I mean, they were pretty close to the same thing. It was just a difference of what type of certificate you would get, really, and what environment you worked in.
Okay, yeah, that's what I thought. From everything that I read, it seemed like her job was slightly lesser than even, you know, an LPN. But she just kept trying to like overstep because she wanted that power, but apparently didn't want to, you know, finish or go to school any further.
Yeah. and let me tell you, the hierarchy in the medical field is there for a reason.
For sure. So at her new job, she was immediately tasked with caring for a child with a fatal condition. And apparently when the child died following complications from surgery, she flipped out and sat vigil over the dead child for a long time, wouldn't let them remove the body. That seems, you know, it seems like that should have raised some red flags right away. But she started displaying other odd behavior pretty regularly, like apparently using syringes to squirt the sign of the cross over babies, or even singing to lifeless infants while readying them for the morgue. And it also became very clear to her colleagues that she liked to feel important and needed. She also wanted to outdo anyone she worked with and would often spend longer hours on her ward than she was supposed to and ask for overtime and obsess over certain patients, saying they needed her attention more than others. But she also failed to attend classes on the proper handling of drugs. And in her first year on this job, made a number of errors when it came to administering medicine. She was also foul-mouthed and even showed up to work drunk and would talk to anyone and everyone about her latest sexual encounters. She also would predict which baby was going to die, which her coworkers weren't a fan of. So needless to say, almost nobody liked her. But for some reason, she was never fired, despite all the reasons she had given for someone to fire her. That's because the head nurse actually really liked Janine and protected her. So I'm guessing that she used her skills as a sociopath to charm the head nurse, because it sounds like she was not very good at her job, much like she wasn't very good at doing hair. Then, in 1981, Janine demanded to be put in charge of the most serious patients, meaning she would be around a lot more death. And that excited her. She seemed to thrive on the excitement of a baby in distress and would tout herself to the others anytime she played any part in saving a baby's life. And when a baby didn't make it, she'd of course sing to it as she dressed it and prepared it for the morgue, and would often cry hysterically over the loss. And then more and more babies began to not make it on her watch. 20 babies were dead between May to December 1981, and all had been under her care. And as rumors began to swirl, The head nurse again defended her. But one person, a fellow nurse named Deborah Saltonfuss, persisted and directly accused Janine of killing the patients. Nobody on the staff other than the colleague would believe that Janine could be responsible for the deaths of those infants. But since Saltonfuss wouldn't back down, they asked both nurses to resign so they could easily sweep this all beneath the rug. So, immediately after leaving her second job, under peculiar circumstances, Janine got a job at a pediatric physician's clinic near San Antonio. There were respiratory issues in several babies right away, but since they recovered, no suspicion fell onto Janine at her new job. Not then, anyway. But in September of 1982, when 14-month-old Chelsea McClellan was brought to the clinic to receive routine immunizations, it was Janine who gave the first injection, sending the baby into a seizure. Janine seemed to not pay attention to what was going on and started to administer a second shot when Chelsea's mother tried to stop her, but she ignored the mother as well and gave the small girl the second shot. She then stopped breathing altogether, and while being rushed to emergency treatment in San Antonio, that was going from, you know, just, you know, a doctor's office to an ER in San Antonio, Chelsea went into cardiac arrest and died. And then other children at the clinic began suffering from seizures. So the doctor in the office started, you know, looking closer at everything, and she discovered puncture marks in a bottle of succinylcholine, where only she and Jones had access. Now, succinylcholine is a muscle relaxant used by anesthesiologists to briefly paralyze patients in order to install breathing tubes. It was also once touted as the perfect murder weapon because in larger doses, it would stop the heart, and it's fast acting and hard to detect in the body. So when an autopsy was performed on Chelsea McClellan, the cause of death was recorded as sudden infant death syndrome, which I find to be absurd. I mean, she was literally in someone's care. And I don't know, SIDS is usually happens at nighttime, right?
Yeah, like, yeah, it's crib death. The babies roll over in their sleep and they can't roll back on their back and they suffocate. That's the main cause of it. Of course, there's, you know, the rare cases where it is like a true like heart failure or something. Yeah. But commonly SIDS is they suffocate in their crib.
Right. And what we found from, you know, I think it was from, you know, the Munchausen syndrome episode, often in the 70s and 80s when a baby died due to murder and medical officials couldn't figure out a cause, they would just say, oh, it's SIDS. Like, no matter what, in the middle of the day, you know, at the hospital, it just seems like that was the go-to when.
Yeah. But honestly, though, this was like, especially the one where the baby had the seizure and the mom was holding the baby, you would at least think if it would be anaphylactic shock, if it, you know, because they don't know that she's giving them this, you know, dangerous drug.
Right.
And you always get warned as a parent that vaccines could cause reactions.
Yeah.
And what to watch out for. And so to me, if I had witnessed a seizure exactly after a vaccine, before I investigated further, I would have been like, oh, anaphylactic shock, like an allergic reaction.
Yeah, I would have definitely thought, oh yeah, she was allergic to that vaccine. But you know, I guess they just was like, oh well, it's SIDS, you know.
So to be a medical examiner in the 80s.
Yeah, and apparently, you know, you can be you can be a vocational nurse and, you know, go have the most severe patients under your care.
Yeah, just, you know, run the whole ward, be the charge nurse.
Yeah, right. Oh man, yeah, things were so different then. And there are also reports that Janine visited the baby's grave a week later, and her mother actually showed up and caught her. You know, she was like standing over the grave crying, and the mother was actually like, why are you here? And so, you know, that raised some red flags. The mom was starting to really suspect some things, but, you know, it was, you know, even the 70s was even hard for people to, you know, report crimes. I guess it was the early 80s by now, but everything was just so much more difficult. That's what we've learned. and, you know, camping, hospitals, you know, all that. So, you know, it wasn't just the mother who was beginning to be suspicious. The doctor at the clinic was also starting to get, you know, a little nervous. So she asked Janine about the succinylcholine, and Janine wouldn't give any kind of feasible explanation and even suggested that, oh, let's just throw the bottle away so nobody will ask any questions. And this, of course, alarmed the doctor even more. So she started taking a closer look at the clinic's medicine supply and discovered that another bottle of sux, as it was called in the medical field, had been filled with saline. I didn't want to say succinylcholine a fourth time because I was probably going to say it wrong eventually.
You said it right, though, that everybody refers to it as sux.
Yeah. And so, you know, the bottle was filled with saline. So someone had clearly been using a whole lot of this very toxic, potentially toxic drug. I mean, isn't succinylcholine even used to euthanize pets like dogs and cats? I think so. Yeah, yep. It's that strong.
And this was before you had to log it. I mean,
yeah.
And I've worked in both the medical and the veterinary field. And whenever we had to use it to euthanize animals, we had to log every milliliter that we drew out. Even if we didn't use it, you couldn't put it back in, but you had to log exactly how much you wasted and exactly what you did to dispose of it. And if your balance was off, you shut everything down until you figured out where that missing milliliter went.
Yeah, like, you know, it was not called the, it wasn't referred to as the perfect murder weapon for nothing, you know.
Yeah.
I got to be suspicious of that. And now they monitor every drug, and which, as they should.
Thanks to those 80s nurses.
Yep, exactly. So knowing that the doctor was on to her, Janine went to the doctor first and told her, hey, I just took an overdose of anxiety medicine. So she was rushed to the hospital where she had her stomach pumped, and it was revealed that she had actually not overdosed and had only taken 4 of the pills. But she still faked a coma to distract the doctor from her investigation of the missing medicine.
Sorry, I have to unmute. Yeah. Oh my God. This is like a soap opera. Like,
it is.
Like, this is such a Days of Our Lives General Hospital trope right now.
Yeah, an early 80s, early 90s storyline, like, for sure. Yeah, like faking a coma. Like,
as if the medical people wouldn't, I mean, what is going through her mind?
I don't know. She definitely had her delusions of grandeur, that's for sure. She thought she could do anything. So, you know, you can't fake a coma long to, you know, medical officials. So she made her fake recovery and then was fired from the clinic. So then finally, a task force was formed and the investigation into Janine Jones intensified. All of her past jobs were examined closely. And then they started adding up the number of deaths that happened on her watch. And the number, you know, was staggering. And it was clear what had been happening. And much to Janine's surprise, a new test had just been developed in Sweden that actually can detect the presence of succinylcholine in tissue, in body tissue. So Chelsea McClellan's body was exhumed in 1982 and tested, and sure enough, there were traces of the drug in her body, but there was still no actual proof against Janine. No one had seen her inject that baby with that drug, you know, because the baby's mother saw the vaccines given. She had no idea what was in them. To me, that still sounds a little bit absurd that, you know, well, that was probably what she was injecting the baby with, but it's still, you know, there's still not that concrete evidence.
Yeah, those little loopholes will get you every time.
So in February 1983, a grand jury convened to look into the 47 suspicious deaths of children at just Bexar Medical Center Hospital. All those deaths happened over a period of 4 years and all coincided with Janine's time at that job. So 3 former employees, including Janine, were questioned by 2 separate grand juries. And they questioned the doctor, they questioned the parents of, you know, the children. And it was, you know, it was just the evidence was just mounting and mounting against her. So she was indicted on 1 count of murder, that of Chelsea McClellan, and several charges of injury to 7 other children. Then the other grand jury indicted her on injuring Rolando Santos, a four-week-old who had been injected with heparin 2 years earlier. And I didn't even look up heparin because I wanted to ask you what it was.
So heparin is a blood thinner.
Okay.
So basically when you give too much heparin, you start to bleed internally, like your blood thins to the point where you are internally bleeding and you die.
Okay, so he nearly died from it. He did not die, but that was you directly in under her care. So I guess I don't know what vaccine or what shot he was supposed to be getting, but it surely wasn't, you know, a four-week-old was not getting a blood thinner.
So, right, yeah. Right. So, and a lot of times it's used to bust up blood clots. It can be used to, like a very small amount can be used in your IV port if you have one in, just so it doesn't clot up, because sometimes you'll get, you know, if you've ever had an IV inserted, you'll notice sometimes you get a little bit of blood that comes out like a backwash.
Mm-hmm.
And it can actually clot, and then it stops your whole flow of medicine or fluids going into your system. So you can just give, and it's like the smallest amount, like a drop is all it takes.
Wow.
And it will bust that up and keep it from resealing, essentially. And then newborn babies get it for different reasons, for testing and stuff, but it's also a very minute amount, and it's a temporary effect.
Gotcha. So needless to say, administrators from those hospitals were appalled, they were embarrassed, they were, you know, because they clearly didn't do anything. And then there's all this stuff just building up against her at all those jobs, and nobody had done anything. And so I'm hoping, I didn't dig into a hate trial. I think I've made it clear on here before that I hate talking about the trial parts of these cases and lawsuits and stuff. So I didn't dig into that. I'm hoping the families sued the hospitals, you know, all the hospitals and all the clinics. I'm sure they did. I hope they did. And because they were just as responsible for those deaths.
Right. What is it? Accessory to murder is basically what I would view it as.
Yeah, that's what I would look at as too. So hopefully there was, you know, a nice hefty lawsuit. And so there were two separate trials, and the first one began on January 15th, 1984, for the murder of Chelsea McClellan and the injury to the other children. And prosecutors said that Jeanine Jones had a hero complex. They said that she just had the desire to take children to the edge of death and then bring them back so that she could be acclaimed their savior, their hero. And one of the former colleagues reported that she had wanted to get more sick children into the intensive care unit. She kept saying, they're out there and we just have to find them. She was obsessed. Other witnesses testified that she would contradict herself by telling one person that she had injected a specific type of medicine and then tell another person that it was something else. So, you know, it was clear, all this pattern of behavior was clearly suspicious, including the fact that she even asked for additional education and a seminar specifically on the use of succinylcholine, which to me is bizarre.
Oh my God.
She has no reason to even touch that drug. Like, she is not, and you know, performing surgery.
Delusional.
And why didn't anybody say anything?
And honestly, I mean, I know this was the 70s and 80s before things got regulated. Today, trust me, people who are listening, who are not in the medical field, things are very regulated. And if you are not a registered nurse, an RN or higher, you do not touch those types of drugs.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So don't be afraid to go to the doctor. Don't be afraid to get vaccines. This was all in the 70s and 80s, you don't go camping in the 70s and you don't go to the hospital in the 70s and 80s. those are our slogans.
Yes, basically, if 70s and 80s survival, you want to live in a nice little idyllic small town, but not too small and
right.
Not too far out in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And you just don't want to go to a big city hospital or a national park.
Yes. And don't get into white vans.
Absolutely.
There's so many rules that we've discovered.
No hitchhiking.
Oh yeah, absolutely no hitchhiking. So the first jury deliberated for only 3 hours. And on February 15th, 1984, Jeanine Jones was convicted of murder and she was given the maximum sentence of 99 years. Later that year, in October, she was found guilty of the charge of injuring Rolando Santos and was given an additional sentence, and the two combined totaled 159 years. But strangely enough, in 2018, she was scheduled for mandatory release. Like, she had to be released. But people, you know, were like, let's not release her, because prosecutors in 2017 cited new evidence against her and filed 5 new murder charges. And in 2020, just last year, she took a plea bargain that forced her to plead guilty to killing one 11-month-old. His name was Joshua Weeks, and that was in 1981. She, in exchange for that plea, the other 4 charges were dropped. But this time she was sentenced to life. But she'll be up for parole again in 18 years when she's 87. So my guessing is she will probably die in prison and won't be getting out when she's 87.
I have to say, I'm glad that the prosecutors were savvy enough to bring up new charges to get around the mandatory release thing, because that would have not went down well.
Yeah, and it's almost like they waited just in time for it. And that's good. I'm surprised she confessed, but I guess one life sentence is better than 4 life sentences. I don't know. Or 5 life sentences. I don't know. Who knows with this lady?
Or she might have been like, well, nobody's talked about me in so many years. Maybe this will get my name going again. Or something. You know, how sociopaths are, like, they need to be talked about.
You make a very good point. You know, I think that's exactly the way she was too. Something I just kind of cut out earlier when I was doing my notes was a story about during all this, she actually married a 19-year-old. She was already like in her, you know, late 30s around that time. You know, that's fine, whatever. But we're talking about her, so I'm gonna like totally judge her. But anyway, and apparently she did it to get attention, but also throw off a story that she was a lesbian, like, and I don't know. And it's just a part of a story that I didn't feel like digging into because I didn't want to like go there. But now that you mentioned that, I just had to bring that up because she was like, she pulled some stunts here and there, you know.
Yeah.
So it's like,
She seems like one of those people that any publicity is good publicity.
Uh-huh. And you know she's probably like the jail nurse, like the you know, the bootleg nurse.
Oh, gosh, yes.
She's probably like, you know, sewing up, you know, shiv wounds and all this shit. Like, man,
And just living her best life, probably.
Yeah, probably living it up. I can only imagine the way she tries to draw attention in prison.
Oh, no. Oh, my gosh.
Because that's an addiction.
She probably contradicts whatever the prison doctors and nurses tell the sick people.
Oh, yes.
Like, you know, she does. Oh, he gave you that antibiotic? That don't do nothing.
don't take that.
I can just see it in my head. You ought to take these essential oils.
Yeah, you know, she's something else. And I'm going to go back to Annie Wilkes. I think Annie Wilkes had to be based on her. There's just too many similarities. Annie Wilkes is a lot more entertaining than this woman is. But
based on what you've told me about this woman, I could probably imagine her saying cock-a-doodie.
Yeah. I think I'm starting to think maybe Stephen King actually spoke to her at some point.
And you know she'd cut off a leg if it got her what she wanted.
I'm bummed that Derek's not here tonight because he would love a good Annie Wilkes discussion.
Oh, he I know.
He and I actually we have a little thing we refer to when we're like in a dark place or a bad mood. We're like, don't be Annie Wilkes in a rainstorm, because if you know. So. That's my advice tonight.
Don't be Annie Wilkes in a rainstorm.
Yeah. So
well, that was a good one, Brandon.
Yeah, and you know it's a story I've heard before, but it's also not covered that much. I don't think medical crime is that popular. in the whole true crime world. It's I think there will probably be some kind of resurgence, I would say. But I heard this case from good old American Justice, and my favorite voice, Bill Curtis. Well, one of my favorite voices, Bill Curtis, a long time ago. So I've always known about it. And today I started, I even told you guys, I was like, I've been working on a roundup of killer nurses. And I was, I'm a major procrastinator. So I started working on the hefty part of it today. And I was like, oh, there's so much with just Jeanine Jones that I'm just going to focus on her. So I want to officially announce a killer nurse series. So who knows what I'll do next or when, but I will do another because there are so many and so many unbelievable stories.
And that'll be exciting. From my experiences, I've never experienced any medical killers or anything like that, but there are a lot of professionals that you see these types of tendencies toward. So it's fascinating to see where the line gets crossed.
Yeah. And I want to know how modern day angels of death are working. They're still out there. I know that, there's all these regulations now, so they can't just do it. So I'm just so curious about what's happening out there that we don't know about. Yeah. What are their new tricks? Is it still happening? Is it happening less? We won't know for another 10 years when, there have been a few deaths.
Now, I feel, just from my experience in the medical field, that the trend will be that you'll find that it's more doctors and more home health types of things.
Home health makes sense.
Because home health, you're basically a freelancer. It's you as the caregiver interacting with that patient in their home. And then you have various levels of home health care. There's some that just need minimal care, but who's to say you could easily find a way to dispose of them in their own home if you were a psychopath, right, and get away with it, because while it is highly monitored, they're already prescribed certain painkillers and they're on palliative care, which means make them comfortable until they pass away.
Yeah.
Who's to say that, you could easily get away with giving them a little extra morphine or
right,
a pillow over the face, which now I feel bad even saying that. Like, I feel like I'm the psychopath now.
Hey, we've read and heard it all by now. So.
Yes, yes. And then as far as doctors, nobody argues with a doctor except for another doctor. Mm-hmm. And then even then, they don't want to argue with their colleagues because that doctor might need to help them out one day or do them a favor one day. So that if you study this and you keep track of it, I feel like that's going to be my prediction, that we're going to find out it's going to be more in the modern age. It's going to be more home health and it's going to be more doctors.
Yeah, I agree. And doctors, like you said, they can cause any death and rule it for anything they want.
Yeah.
And they're so trusted by patients and patients' families that they might not question it. They might not ask for an autopsy. If they trust the doctor that much, and that's what you're supposed to do. Trust your doctor. And if there's not, and if you don't suspect something and it didn't seem like, an unusual death, then you're not gonna, bother with it. And there have been doctors in history that have, killed. There was a German doctor that euthanized a bunch of his patients and just, there's all these stories about that. Like, we could just go on and on.
And there's actually a series on the ID channel. The name has slipped my mind at this moment, but I just watched it like 2 or 3 months ago. Heather Dubrow's husband, Terry Dubrow from The Real Housewives of Orange County, he hosts it.
Oh yeah.
It's killer doctors or something like that. But it's not just doctors. It's also nurses and nurses' aides and things like that. But I will tell you what will catch these people in the modern day is an old grizzled nurse from the 80s who has been there since this shit went down. And she knows what to look for now. And she is at a point where she's close to retirement. So she gives no F's. Because you see these nurses too, they'll argue with a doctor when they know the doctor is doing the wrong thing. I've seen them do it. So So I think that's going to be the trend. It's going to be doctors, it's going to be home health care people that are doing the bad things, and it's going to be these old, close to retirement nurses who've seen it all that are going to be responsible for getting those people caught.
Yes, and thankful. We'll be thankful for them for more reasons than one.
Yes, and my advice to people who are a little scared of healthcare or nervous about being in the hospital, find the most senior nurse, because I guarantee you, even if they're a little gruff, they know what they're doing, and they will look out for their patients. So, you know, if listening to this makes you a little wary of healthcare, you know what, that's the comfort I can offer. Look for the most senior nurse to help you out, because because they don't care at this point. They will tell you exactly what you need to hear. And it actually does actually make people feel more comfortable when they hear everything, and it's not sugar-coated and it's not covered in medical talk. So that would be my advice if you're scared after listening to this episode.
That sounds like some good advice. Well, thanks for listening once again. And as always, you can find us everywhere on the internet. You know where to look: Twitter, Facebook, the website. You know, just search 3AM Mystery Club. You'll find us. And we're not going to get ahead of ourselves, but we've got some good plans coming up that you're going to be excited about. We'll get into that a little more later, but just be thinking about it. Till next time.
Bye.